But in the meantime, they've got to produce, you know, significant and substantial results through clinical trials that show that your therapy isn't just another digital health app that falls by the wayside. It's actually a therapy. It actually provides a therapeutic result and delivers an outcome.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, April 12th. Rajiv and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by mParticle. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by one of our digital health analysts. It's Rajiv Leventhal.
Thanks, Marcus. Thanks for having me. Happy to be back.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having you back on the show. Today's fact, how many Americans have a passport? Well, today, more than 40%, 40% of Americans have a passport, 44% to be exact. 10 years ago in 2011, 35% did. 10 years before that, in 2001, 18% did. So in 2001, 18% of Americans had a passport. Today, 44% do.
Would be interesting to find out how many of those Americans with a passport have used it in the last 12 months or 24 months, and kind of compare those two metrics.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fascinating question. Yes. So these numbers, they come from the government, the US Department of State. But another number which I noticed, talking about using your passport, is how powerful is your passport. And so this is a graphic that came from Visual Capitalist. How powerful is your passport? And they basically looked at how easy is it for you to visit different countries. So they have a visa-free score. It refers to the number of countries that a passport holder can visit without a visa, with a visa on arrival, or by obtaining an electronic travel authorization or ETA. So if you have a certain passport, how easy is it for you to travel around the world? And Americans should be using their passports because you guys come in seventh place, which is tied with the UK. It's actually down two places from your 2011 ranking. You're in fifth, 2021, now in seventh, tied with the UK. In first place, Japan, then Singapore, then Germany, South Korea, and then Finland is tied with a bunch of other countries for joint fifth place. So it's pretty powerful, Americans.
Yeah, this all this passport talk is giving me the travel bug again. I might book a vacation after this.
If anyone wants to hit pause and just book a trip and not listen to this episode, that's fine. I'm kidding. Don't you dare. Today's topic, digital therapeutics. So, Reggie, we're talking about digital therapeutics today, as I mentioned. What the hell are they? What are we talking about?
Yeah. Well, not to sound like a dictionary, but I think for this topic specifically, it's important to really define, you know, what they are. So, you know, you have all these digital tools and products and apps on the market that are available to consumers, and their intent is basically to help people manage their health in some way or the other in between physician visits, right? But how many of them actually work? How many of them make a difference in a person's health? And that's where digital therapeutics come into play. They are apps or software programs, essentially, that are backed by evidence and science. And that's the real difference. So you have hundreds of thousands of digital health apps that are available to you and I. We can just go to the app store and download them for free. But we don't know if they're clinically validated. We don't know if they're actually going to produce, deliver an outcome on my health. But digital therapeutics claim to do that. They make claims that in many cases are reviewed by the FDA. So it's, you know, it's serious. And they're saying that we're going to affect our programs, our apps are going to affect the treatment of individuals by enabling a positive outcome, or at least directly contributing to one. Many of them are prescribed by doctors. So you know that if a doctor is reviewing the data and sees that a product is FDA approved and they're prescribing it, that's going to add a level of certification and validation to it. So it's still pretty a pretty nascent area of digital health. There's not a ton of these products out there, but they are publishing clinical trials to show and demonstrate their validity. And the successful ones are going to be able to grow in this marketplace because they're going to be able to say, look at all these hundreds of thousands of other apps and products out there. Well, these are just like that, but they're actually going to make you healthier.
Right.
And I think that's potentially a game changer.
Okay, so it sounds like these digital therapeutics are, they're validated, if you will, or approved, more stringently approved health products or services. And as you mentioned, I thought that was fascinating that you say most but not all digital therapeutics are regulated in the US by the FDA. What kinds of conditions then are digital therapeutics most likely to treat?
Yeah, there's different conditions, but you know, the one of the big ones are mental health and behavioral health. A lot of digital therapeutic programs use a technique called cognitive behavioral therapy. And you know, a lot of therapeutics rely on some sort of lifestyle or behavioral change. So mental health and behavioral health, as we know, the need for accessible solutions in these areas has skyrocketed during the pandemic. So that's probably the number one condition or conditions that digital therapies focus on. But there's others too. And, you know, they're not all apps. For example, there's this company called Akili Interactive that makes a product called Endeavor RX. And it's specifically for pediatric ADHD patients. And what this product does, it's a video game-based therapy where it is actually attesting that if you go through this video game program, it will actually result in increased brain activity related to attention function. And this is an area where traditional ADHD medications actually fall short. So you're actually, in that case, saying that this could be medicine in some form. Mm-hmm. Now, many other therapies are not doing that. They're saying, you know, you need to take medication for your specific condition, whether it's diabetes or a cardiovascular condition, but also use our digital therapies to sort of create this well-rounded super treatment regimen for your specific condition.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned behavior change. I thought it was fascinating in your report that you say over 80% of total healthcare spend is on diseases that could be altered or reversed through behavior change. 80% of total healthcare spend is on diseases that could be altered or reversed through behavior change. So initially, when you think about this, digital therapeutics, at least personally, I thought, oh, okay, it's an app, it's a platform, it's a service. You use it and it maybe it works a little bit, but it probably doesn't. And is it going to be sustainable? And how many use cases can this really have? It seems like, you know, these could have a very big effect on healthcare spend. And then the other thing you know is a lot of these digital therapeutic platforms target therapeutic interventions for chronic and mental health conditions. And you make the point that that comprises 90% of annual US healthcare expenditures. So it's not some niche market they're going after. They're going after the vast majority of conditions.
That's right. And you're asking the right questions, because what's the most important thing, the two most important things to do in healthcare? It's get everyone healthier, right? And bring costs down, because costs are unsustainable right now. And health insurers particular, we'll get into, you know, some of the entities that are going to partner and invest in digital therapeutics later. But health insurers in particular are motivated to cut costs. If a patient, if a member of, you know, Blue Cross has consistently going to the ER, consistently has expensive medical interventions, that's going to come out on the bottom line for the health insurer. And health insurers are motivated to kind of put some of these therapies in their coverage packages, because if patients will use these, and if it will keep them in some cases out of the hospital or away from expensive procedures, then that's going to help their bottom line significantly.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned how this could benefit insurers, but what's the value of digital therapeutics in the eyes of different healthcare stakeholders, because of which there are many?
Right, of course. So really, no matter who the stakeholder is, they're going to want to see that clinical validation. Providers are very busy people. They're going to want to know that a product has run through a certain amount of clinical trials and has validated specific results in improving outcomes. They're going to also, it's an added benefit if the product is FDA authorized or authorized by you know, the similar process in the EU. And it is, I mean, we mentioned the FDA before, but it is a long and time-consuming and resource-intensive process to get a digital health product validated and approved by the FDA. You have to meet a very high standard, which, you know, is reasonable. But that's why, you know, not all digital therapeutics are validated by FDA and authorized just yet. But I think most are on the path to becoming so. But in the meantime, they've got to produce, you know, significant and substantial results through clinical trials that show that your therapy isn't just another digital health app that falls by the wayside. It's actually a therapy. It actually provides a therapeutic result and delivers an outcome. So that's the value for payers and providers. Like, will this make my patient and my member healthier? Will it cut costs? And the other part is separately is pharmaceutical companies. And they're kind of the most organic partner for digital therapeutics. You think about these drug developers that are developing medications and treatments for specific conditions. Well, what if they can add a digital product that will, you know, add a layer to that treatment in addition to what their drug does? So just one quick example. Let's say you have a pharma company that makes a drug for multiple sclerosis. Well, one of the most common side effects of MS is depression. So now you can, you know, you're creating your conventional MS drug, but you're also partnering with a digital therapeutics company that specifically has programs that are clinically backed and scientifically proven to help mm-hmm. with depression. Isn't that kind of sort of creating this digital companion or pill plus to your conventional medication that's been around forever? Sort of yep. a win-win for pharmaceutical companies who are looking to continue to innovate.
So let's zoom out for a second. Who are some of the top digital therapeutics players / what does the market look like today?
So one of the early innovators in digital therapeutics was this company called Omada. They started with an online diabetes prevention program that was based on behavior change science. But it's more than that. It includes remote monitoring from clinicians. And that's a big part of this. You know, your typical app that you download or digital health product that you use might not be monitored by physicians. But Omada is one company that, you know, includes virtual coaching, things like that. And you know, that was one of the first ones. And I'd like to call out another company, this DTX, digital therapeutics player called Pear Therapeutics. And I'm specifically mentioning them because they have 3 prescription digital therapeutics on the market, which is pretty significant. Mm. One's for substance use disorder, another one's for opioid use disorder, and a third is for chronic insomnia. And the use disorder ones are really interesting because their program will allow patients to, you know, sort of report cravings and triggers that might have previously led to, you know, some sort of substance use. And obviously the goal is to get abstinence there. And they're saying, we're not replacing medication again, but we're going to provide you with a bunch of tests and lessons. That data, along with the report of triggers and cravings and things like that, all goes to a clinician who's monitoring from, you know, from outside. And Pear Therapeutics is an example of a company that's sort of taken advantage of what's happened during the pandemic and, you know, with the increase of substance use disorders and, of course, the opioid epidemic. And they think that, you know, we have an opportunity here in the market to help and provide more accessible solutions in these specific areas.
Well, so on that example, it's fascinating because Pear Therapeutics, so they're digital therapeutics offering for opioid use disorder. You explain how it works. Patients report cravings, triggers via an app, complete lessons, things like that, and that's shared with the clinician. But you also point out the outcome of that. Hospitalizations lowered by 62% and ER visits by 20%, 6 months from treatment onset compared to the baseline period. So to your point at the beginning, these are proven platform services that show real results after the fact. And I thought that was a fantastic example of one of these at work. Finally, Rajiv, what are the key factors determining future success for digital therapeutics companies?
Yeah, well, actually, Marcus, it was, you know, one of the questions you kind of asked before was patient adoption, patient adherence, right? How many patients are going to use these products? Are they going to adhere to their treatment regimens, which might last months or sometimes even longer? You know, a big problem in healthcare is that, you know, patients often lag with their medication usage. You know, a doctor might prescribe something, but a patient might not completely fulfill the regimen to its entirety. And mm-hmm. that is certainly a challenge. So the ones that can prove that patients will adhere to their regimens, patients will actually use them, will be successful ones. And that's what, you know, we talked about payers and providers. That's what they're going to want to see too. A payer is not going to cover certain digital therapy on their network, and a provider isn't going to prescribe it unless they know that patients are actually using it and patients are going to adhere through the entire course of treatment. So those will be the really big factors.
Yeah. I kind of think of it as having a tiny kind of Ant-Man sized physician who just lives in your house and you take them everywhere and they're constantly like, right. Did you report that? Did you check this? Did you take that medication? Try these things out.
Right.
It's all fascinating. That's all we've got time for, unfortunately, for the lead. It's time now for the halftime report. Rajiv, we've covered a lot of ground today, but one takeaway from the first half.
Yeah, takeaway would be that this is a very nascent area of digital health, but it's an emerging one. $3 billion of funding has poured into digital therapeutics companies last year, which I think tripled year over year. And the reason is there is a need for accessible solutions that are clinically validated, that stand apart from the sea of digital health tools and products and apps out there that might be cool looking, but don't really do a whole lot. So if you can prove that your digital therapy works, there will be interest.
All right, time for In Other News, but first a quick word from our sponsor, mParticle. At the end of the day, your customer has to be at the center of everything you do. This starts with the right customer data strategy, as well as the right foundation to solve the challenges that typically inhibit success, such as data quality, data governance, and connectivity. mParticle is your real-time customer data infrastructure that helps you accelerate your data strategy by cleansing, visualizing, and integrating your customer data from anywhere to anywhere. Ultimately, better data leads to better decisions, better customer experiences, and better outcomes. See why the best brands choose mParticle. Go to www.mParticle.com. Folks, we are back today in other news. United Health Group gets even bigger, and Google is doing more to help you find healthcare providers. Story one, United Health Group, or UHG, their healthcare services arm called Optum, is buying one of the largest US in-home healthcare organizations called LHC Group for over $5 billion, per the Wall Street Journal notes insider intelligence digital health analyst Aram Ahmed. For $5 billion, UHG gets access to LHC Group's 30,000 healthcare workers and its massive patient base. Rajiv, as Aram writes, United Health Group is becoming a clinical care behemoth, and that should worry its peers. My question to you is, it should worry its peers because blank.
United Optum's competitive advantage in healthcare has just gotten stronger. The term payviders is becoming more commonly used, essentially payers and providers merging together. And no bigger example of this than United, who has become the dominant force in healthcare markets. United / Optum has this huge competitive advantage. United employs 60,000 physicians in the U.S. Isn't that crazy to you? They are a payer, right? Most people think of them as a payer, which they are, but they employ 60,000 physicians. They are aligning physicians from all over specialties now, home care providers. Home care is a big point of interest for a lot of healthcare investors and stakeholders. And the takeaway here is that United Optum is becoming this dominant force in healthcare, and now they have their eyes on home care. So everyone should be watching because they are the biggest, whether you want to call it disruptor or innovator, they are the biggest one out there.
Yeah, to your point about home care, the article also noted nearly 78% of nursing homes had to restrict admissions, 78% in 2021, according to a 2021 survey by the National Center for Assisted Living, because of staff shortages and closures. And also the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services projects Medicare enrollment will increase to 80 million beneficiaries by 2030. That's up from 54 million in 2015.
People want care in their homes, Marcus, especially older people, as you mentioned. Here's a McKinsey analysis recently found that almost $300 billion worth of care services conducted in clinics could and should shift to the home by 2025. That's just incredible.
So, wow.
Yeah, we'll see if the quality of care remains at the same level, which I think is a fair question, but there's a lot of interest in that shift.
Wow, that quick shift by 2025, that's basically next year. It's not, but it is. Story two, Google is rolling out a new search feature that lets Google users find and book available appointments with nearby healthcare providers. No, it's Ms. Ahmed, Aram Ahmed, who we just mentioned of Insider Intelligence. Its first partner is MinuteClinic at CVS. But Rajiv, the impact of this new health services search feature from Google will be blank.
Is that the power of Google search is extending to healthcare. You know, people will be able to book medical appointments right on Google. We think of companies like Yelp and ZocDoc, right, as the big players in being able to book online appointments. And that's not going anywhere anytime soon. But when you throw in the power of Google search, I mean, this is going to be a force worth watching. They're starting with you, as you mentioned, with CVS MinuteClinic. They're a retail health clinic that is not currently on ZocDoc. So, and they're digital friendly to kind of begin with. So that's a good place for Google to start. What will be interesting to see in the future is if they extend and how much they extend into private practices. So will private practices put their appointment availability right on Google search, and you and I can just, you know, search in the toolbar, Dr. XYZ availability. I think that day is coming sooner than you think.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating to see how much they're going to disrupt this space, how much Google Flights has disrupted aggregators, aggregating services. Yeah. One out of three US patients use Facebook, Yelp, and WebMD. Facebook, Yelp, and WebMD to research and select a doctor, Aram notes, according to 2021 Patient Pop Analysis. That is all we got time for. Thank you, Reggie, for hanging out.
Yeah, had fun. Thanks, Marcus.
Yes, sir. Thanks to Victoria. She edits the show, but you already knew that. And thanks to everyone listening. Tune in tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast made possible by mParticle.